June is Pride Month, and the LGBTQ community has a lot to be proud of. Despite facing cultural stigma, LGBTQ relationships have unique strengths, strengths that we can all integrate into our own relationships, no matter how we identify or no matter who we love. Our next guest is a counselor that specializes in LGBTQ relationships. She's here in the studio to talk about what she's observed in her practice and what we know from existing research. And you can join us with your questions, your comments, and your experiences. The phone number, 1-800-642-1234. What are some strengths and challenges of LGBTQ relationships that you found in your experiences, in your relationships? If you're straight, what relationship questions do you have for LGBTQ couples? Join us. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Gina Senarighi is a Wisconsin-based author, sexuality counsel, and relationship coach. And Gina, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me. This is exciting. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride to you, too. And I want to start with the research and what the science says. And you spoke about this in your recent podcast, Swoon, Love Lessons with Julia and Gina. You're the Gina part of that. What does research say about the unique relationship experiences of queer couples?
Yeah, well, it's actually kind of exciting. And I find it, as a queer person myself, really validating that there is, frankly, a lot of research coming out showing the strengths of our relationships in a world that where a lot of people misunderstand our relationships or have judgments about how we structure them or a lot of assumptions and misinformation about how we do love. To have actual research, most of it right now coming out of the Relationship Research Institute, that's John and Julie Gottman. They're really famous couples therapists and researchers. That really looks at, okay, comparatively, what do we know about LGBTQ relationships and how they differ from straight or heterosexual relationships? And they found several several elements that are really key strengths. One of them, do you want me to just launch into them?
Well, I'm curious about what makes these relationships different from heteronormative relationships and why we're finding that there are strengths there that wouldn't necessarily find a given in straight couples.
Yeah. Well, so their relationship research has been mostly on same-sex or same-gender couples. So that's folks who identify as two men or two women. They're not doing research on polyamorous relationships. They haven't done a ton yet on relationships with trans identified folks or transgender identified folks. So we're looking at gay men and lesbians mostly. But they've been publishing research on LGBT relationships since 2017. And one of the elements that's really strong is our ability to navigate conflict successfully. What they find is that our resiliency comes in a couple of different ways. One, we show more affection throughout conflict. So there might be, even though we're arguing or disagreeing about something, we're likely to make appropriate jokes, not necessarily like spiteful jokes or something, but we're able to bring some levity and some humor into conflict. We're more likely to show physical affection while navigating conflict. So, holding a partner's hand while talking about something really difficult, rubbing someone's back while we're talking about something difficult can be really soothing and helps you navigate conflict with greater sense of connection, right? Yeah. We're also less likely to take things personally in conflict. And so, the times when maybe there's a misunderstanding and it feels like it's got a barb.
I'm being attacked.
Right. We're more likely to say, oh, is that really about me? Or is that even subconsciously, is that really about me personally? Or is that just, this person's bringing me information? And because of that, we're less likely to get escalated in a conflict or feel really insecure about ourselves throughout it, get less defensive. And, that's usually when conflicts take a pretty ugly turn, is when you're feeling defensive and insecure. Or I am.
And some of these, conflict navigation sounds like it brings relationships closer, has a tendency to bring couples closer as opposed to, instead of reaching out, withholding, and as opposed to pulling back and lack of any sort of physical or interpersonal contact, turning away from conflict, but actually leaning into it.
Yeah. And it's not like LGBT relationships are perfect. It's not like there's no conflict or, you know, no issue there. But what we see in the research is that we're able to navigate it more successfully and stay connected, take it less personal. Those are factors that help us move through the conflict, which is a natural part of any relationship, gay or straight.
Right? It should be in a healthy one. But what is it that for gay or lesbian couples that makes them more inclined towards healthier conflict navigation?
You know what? I think that hasn't fully been published yet. So Dr. Brené Brown got pretty famous for a while there about working through shame and shame resilience and what vulnerability and shame looks like. And what she would say is that shame is a natural part of any human being, right? Like it's going to come up. And shame is this idea that some part of me is unworthy of love, is unworthy of belonging. Right. And as a queer person or an LGBTQ person in society, there's a lot of messages that say something's wrong with you out there. There's a lot of people who would tell us that. And so in order to be an out member of this community, you have to build some shame resilience. You have to be able to say, I'm worthy of love and belonging, even if somebody else has these ideas about me. And then that transfers. This is, you know, I think that transfers into the conversation we have with a partner, right? Where we're less likely. Now it's not, we're not impermeable to shame, right? Like it's part of truly human condition.
Yes.
We're humans. but we're able to navigate through that a little bit more successfully as well, where we're less likely to say, I am broken or unlovable, and more likely to say, okay, this situation's really hard, or we're both really stressed out, or these are the factors that are coming to play here, instead of saying, oh, I'm terrible or you're a bad guy, right?
So the shame resilience can aid and support healthier conflict navigation.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. When I trained with Brené Brown, I asked her, you know, it sounds a lot like shame and oppression go hand in hand. How does she see them as the same? And she said she loves a Venn diagram was her response. And she was like, they are not the same thing, but they work together and they often overlap. And so folks who have been able to navigate in an oppressive context successfully are also likely to navigate shame more successfully. And shame, you know, builds depression and disconnection in all kinds of ways.
Gina Senarigi, our guest, Wisconsin-based author, sexuality counselor, and relationship coach. And you can join our conversation with your questions, your experiences at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Gina, what have you observed in working with LGBTQ couples in your own work, in your own counseling? What do you see?
I mean, I do see the factors that have been that have come up in the research. One of the things that that we don't always think about, but it's very true, is that in heterosexual couples, there's a lot of socialization that sets us up to think, okay, you're the man in the relationship, you do these things, I'm the woman in the relationship, I do these things. And we don't always even think about it. We don't always even realize, like, oh, somehow I ended up being the one who schedules all of our play dates and manages our social calendar. And I didn't even realize that's like a woman's job in a relationship. But somehow we end up there, right? Like, I see couples all the time who end up in these roles and just are like, how do we get here? Something doesn't feel great, but we don't know how to adjust it or even identify it. And for same-sex couples, we have to look at, like, okay, you weren't socialized to do this thing and I wasn't, or we both were. How do we want to distribute household tasks? How do we want to manage responsibilities in a thoughtful way, usually based on our strengths or our interests, rather than just because you have to, because you're the guy, or I feel like I have to I'm a woman.
This is the social norm of it all. This is the way it's always been done. But in LGBTQ couples, lesbian and gay couples, those norms have to be decided.
Yeah. I mean, the lawn still needs to get mowed, right? In our household, somebody has to figure out the bus
default
schedule.
There's no, this is the way it's always been done. So the inertia says this is how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. And so we're inclined to talk about it some and better equipped to navigate, like, oh, huh, somehow we just fell into this pattern, but it's not working. How do we got to change it, right? You're getting grumpy because you're the one always doing our taxes, and I don't like taking the car into the shop,
right? You're going to communicate that grumpiness? This is enlightening. We're talking to Gina Senarighi, Wisconsin-based author, sexuality counselor, and relationship coach, about the unique strengths of LGBTQ relationships and what couples of all kinds can learn from them. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Do you follow societal expectations and the gender norms in your own relationships? How do you divide the labor in your household? And has that caused some tension in your couple? What do you do differently from other couples that you know? Let us know. 1-800-642-1234 or email us ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue our conversation with Gina coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today, and we're picking up our conversation about the unique strengths of LGBTQ relationships, strengths that all types of couples can strive towards. Gina Senarighi is a Wisconsin-based author, sexuality counselor, and relationship coach. You can find her online at heygina.com, and we want to hear what you think at 1-800-642-1234. Have you been in both LGBT and non-LGBT relationships, and what was similar or different about those relationships in your experiences? What other questions would you have for our guest this afternoon? 1-800-642-1234. And Gina, I want to ask about communicating intimacy and how we talk about being intimate together, and how that is different for LGBTQ couples compared to heteronormative couples.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of key differences, and they're different based on the particular identity of the folks in the couple. But what we do know is that if you identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, panqueer, you're likely to have come up against something along in your life that says, oh, the standard normalized heterosexual way of relating in relationships doesn't fit for me either. Like, something as simple as like, I like to initiate kisses a certain way, or I don't care for kissing someone with a mustache, or I really do. Something very similar might be, we come up against that at some point in our life and have to kind of grapple with that, and then are likely to play around with some of the specifics of like, oh, actually, I'm going to tailor my sexual experience in these ways, or I'm going to seek out these experiences, right? We have to get to know that in a more intimate way than our culture usually supports heterosexual people figuring it out. Usually we teach people this is how sex works.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of think that works for everyone. Turns out, I mean, I've been a sex therapist, doesn't really work for a lot of people, but that's for another show. we can come back another time. As a queer person, you have to realize, you have to come to understanding some about your own sexuality and then be able to say that to a partner. I like to be touched this way more than that way, or I prefer this act rather than that act. And so we end up building strength along the way. Now, again, this doesn't apply to every LGBT person in the world. We certainly do experience sexual traumas and all the same issues that lead to complications in talking about sexuality. But because we have to figure out, which are the pieces that align for me and which pieces don't, we tend to get better at communicating that with partners. Gay men especially, in the research, are shown to communicate a lot more directly and clearly about their sexual needs. And we can make a lot of inferences about why that might be around them being socialized or them learning to navigate the world. But it's a great strength when you can say to a partner, this is what I like.
And what we could all take from that is to know yourself and what your gas pedal, and you talked about this with Julie on your podcast, Swoon, what your gas pedal and what your brakes are, and being able to express that to anybody else that you're going to get in the car with.
Yeah. What are your turn-ons and turn-offs, and how are they unique to you? Because every person has a unique set of them. And and amazingly, partners aren't mind readers. So if you if you tell them what those things are, they're more likely to do them or figure out how to do them.
And that might be a little more rewarding than trial and error, per se.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or not talking about it at all, which is the norm.
And ending up someplace where you are not comfortable and, yeah.
Yeah, or just thinking you're doing a great job when you're not.
So, this raises a lot more questions, but they're a lot more interpersonal in nature and probably not for the larger broadcast, Gina.
Might be a different time of day interview. Yeah.
But, LGBTQ couples experience challenges, and are those challenges as unique as some of their strengths?
Hmm. Yeah, there are some. I mean, there definitely is one that we're seeing more research coming out, which is that how do I want to say this? There's this whole field of research called attachment theory. It's been pretty popular in some mainstream literature about relationships lately. But the bottom line is attachment theory talks about how we develop intimate, trusting partnerships and how we really believe that somebody's there for us, right?
Love.
There's a lot that we learn in our early life relationships and our families. Our whole life kind of sets us up for certain attachment styles. And, what we learn over the lifespan is people who have more experiences where, as I'm building a relationship with you, I'm vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like you're making eye contact right now. Like, oh, you're there for me. Right. So there's a moment of I'm learning and my little brain gets to learn, oh, I can trust in this scenario. Right. Or eye contact feels good. Right. This person's listening to me. I also will collect many experiences that tell me that trusting isn't safe. People won't have your back. People might betray you. You don't belong. You're not lovable. Like, those are the messages that come up. And in a society that doesn't support LGBTQ relationships or people as fully as it needs to, lots of people walk away with what we're calling like a gay attachment trauma is one of the ways I've heard it framed, LGBT attachment trauma, right? You think about how many people are kicked out of their churches or their families growing up. That is a huge attachment wound, right? The messages that they take away subconsciously can be don't trust people. Don't be vulnerable.
And it's not just take away, but bring to every relationship that they walk into.
Yeah. And so the result is we tend to feel, and this has shown up in the Gottman's research out of 2017, that we feel less entitled to long-term successful love. And if you think about I'm not that old, I'm in my mid-40s. I lived most of my life without gay marriage being legal. I had a marriage that I had a few weddings to the same person each time. Marriage was legalized in different states, but that is the governmental structure saying, is my relationship valid, real, or true, right? And I watched gay marriage become legalized. That's one way that we validate these are valuable relationships. These are healthy adults. And there's a ton of us out here. It's not been legal that long. It was only 2015, right? So, there's a ton of people with some attachment wounding about, is my relationship valid in the larger society, right? I'm curious to see over time, we're seeing people come out younger and younger. Gen Z has a wide acceptance of LGBTQ relationships. I'm curious to see how this might shift over time.
And in terms of attachment.
Yeah, but seeing more and more parents support their kids who are coming out, which is wonderful.
And might reduce or minimize the traumas that would be brought into these relationships. I'm curious from your experiences as a sexuality counselor, relationship coach, Gina, how can we teach healthy attachment? How can we pass this along to others, our family, our kids? How can we leave them with less trauma?
Yeah. Wow. How much time do I have to...
About 2 minutes.
Okay, great. Yeah, because that's like a whole master's degree right there. what we can do is think about how we are being reliable resources for the people we love and care about, where we might drop the ball, because any one of us is going to drop the ball. I can I can look over to you or I can say something to you in conversation and you might get distracted like any normal human does. And so I might miss that eye contact for a minute. Our job as we're building intimate relationships is to say, oh, hey, I missed you over. I think you were trying to, can I be here for you now, right? To do a little repair and then to try and really be aware of the ways that we're connecting and showing up in reliable ways in relationship.
Does that have to do with repairing our own traumas before we bring it into other relationships?
Again, how many, I could be here all day we could talk about this, but really like it is, we're likely to replicate some of the patterns that we experience. So if you experienced family members who weren't there for you consistently, you haven't necessarily learned how to show up for others consistently and reliably. And if we bring it back to queer relationships and community, one of the things that we see is that there tends to be a strong community support around our relationships. That is another strength of ours, partially because so many folks have bonded as a result of their attachment trauma from their families or from their church or from their high school that kicked them out for being trans or whatever. So we tend to build really strong social bonds, and those often do nourish our relationships.
Gina, happy Pride Month.
Happy Pride.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And you can find more of Gina online at heygina.com. Her podcast is Swoon. That is Love Lessons with Julie and Gina. And her book, Love More, Fight Less, Communication Skills Every Couple Needs, a Relationship Workbook for Couples. Gina Senarighi joining us this afternoon, Wisconsin-based author, sexuality counselor, and relationship coach, talking with us about the particular strengths of LGBTQ relationships and what we can all learn from them.